Good evening, Russell. Welcome to the Space Show.
Hello, Andrew.
What is the Anglo-Australian Observatory?
Well, basically, it was founded for one purpose and one purpose only, which was to operate the Anglo-Australian Telescope. That in itself doesn't tell you very much more, but the two governments and the astronomers in the two countries decided more than 25 years ago, that they had a mutual interest in having a large new optical telescope operating in the southern hemisphere. From the British point of view, coming to Australia was very attractive because the climate here is a lot better than anywhere in Britain in terms of the amount of clear skies you get. And, of course, secondly, you get access to the very exciting and fascinating southern half of the sky. And so the two governments got together and agreed to fund this new telescope, which was one of a generation of what we call 4-meter-class telescopes. It was 150 inches in those days, and that describes the diameter of the primary mirror that collects the light. And the telescope was built on the mountaintop in the Warrumbungles range up near Coonabarabran in New South Wales, and it came into operation in 1974, I guess. 1975 was really when it first started doing substantial astronomy.
What astronomers call first light?
Well, first light in this case is a curious sort of amount of light because the mirror had not been aluminized, so we had the large mirror in the telescope, so it was able to make perfectly good images, which was the most important thing, to check that the optics and the mechanical aspects of the telescope were all properly aligned and properly made. And so they saw the first images with no aluminium on the mirror. And that means, of course, that it wasn't actually collecting light very efficiently at all. It was just the reflection off the surface of the glass or the glass ceramic. And that must have happened in, early 1974, or mid-1974, rather. But by beginning of 1975, the telescope was properly functioning with the aluminium on the mirror and with the first instruments. In fact, the first instrument that was available was simply a photographic camera working at the prime focus so that we could take pictures, and that was happening at the beginning of 1975.
Now, aluminium is, of course, pretty prone to corrosion. Do you have to renew the mirror from time to time?
Yes, although it's not because it corrodes very fast. It does. It oxidizes quite quickly. In fact, a new coating is a beautiful shiny coat, very, very reflective and perfect for astronomy. And within hours, it starts to go off and get a bloom on the surface from formation of oxide and so on. But it reaches a stable state quite quickly where it's reflecting around 80% of the light, and it stays like that for a very long time. What spoils it for us is the fact that these telescopes are not, a large telescope like the AAT isn't a closed structure, it's not a tube that you're looking through or anything like that. It's a very open steel framework that supports the mirror and the other optical components and the instruments. And when you're working at night, the mirror is facing up to the night sky and is simply open to the elements. Now, we don't let it rain on it because we can't observe anyway when it's raining, so we keep the dome tight shut then. But nevertheless, there's dust in the air and there's oils from gum trees and so on. And so what happens is over the course of a year, a film of dust and grime gets onto the mirror. So really what we need to do is clean the mirror at least once a year. But to clean it, we have to take it right out of the telescope, and by the time you've done that and washed it, you might as well put a new coating on the aluminium. So we do the main mirror once every year. But there's only that's only the big mirror. There are many secondary and tertiary mirrors in the system, and those are typically covered with new aluminium only once every few years.
Who funds the Australian? The Anglo-Australian.
As I say, it's jointly done by the two governments, and so we get our money from the governments directly. In the British case, it's channeled through used to be the Science Research Council. It's now a new one called the Particle Physics and Astronomy Research Council. And on the Australian side, the funds come through the Department of Employment, Education and Training. They're put together as a package by the two governments, and the direct management of the facility is by a very simple structure, which is the Anglo-Australian Telescope Board. And this board, it consists of 6 people, 3 Australians and 3 British. And the board agrees what the budget should be and discusses and decides what the overall long-term strategy of the observatory should be, and then talks directly to me as the director and to the other senior people, and that's the full structure of how the observatory policy is set and how the operations are started out.
Do the parties ever have any disagreement on how it should be done? Or?
Frequently at a sort of low or practical level, if you like. I mean, we have a lot of choices to make as what's the next highest priority instrument to build, for example. We've got a whole suite of instruments on the telescope, cameras, spectrographs, photometers, and so on. And so each year we look at our program and decide what's the most important thing we need next. And quite often the British people, the board will think want one thing and the Australians the other. It's not even really the board so much as the community of astronomers. What happens is that because we're national telescopes, we're not a research institute ourselves. We have astronomers on our staff, but the main users of the telescope are the outsiders who come from universities in Britain and in Australia. And so we have mechanisms to consult the users, and they debate what they want most and try to decide what the priorities should be on where the resources of the observatory should go, what to do new, what to fix, if something needs to be refurbished, and so on.
How secure is the funding for this telescope?
Well, that's a difficult question. It's been very stable over more than 20 years now, I should say. And I think it's partly a tribute to the fact that it is a binational organisation, because it means that sometimes when one country is in some temporary financial trouble and would like to make a cutback, if the other country stands firm and says, no, we want to keep it going, the agreement between the two countries says that they two must be equal, and that has been to our advantage quite a few times over the years. Talking for the future, it's been quite interesting recently for two reasons. One is that the original agreement to operate the telescope was for 25 years, and that agreement expires, in fact, next year in 1996. So we were a bit worried about what would happen beyond then. Would the agreement be renewed, or would something fall apart? And in fact, just a few months ago at its last meeting, the board decided, the two sides of the board agreed fully, that in fact they want to continue to operate the telescope at about its present level for at least another decade. I mean, we can't look further forward in some ways than that, although we're sure the telescope has a lifetime of more than that. And so, as far as we can tell, we have good prospects to keep going at about the present level. There are, however, some other effects, and you've got to always look at what's happening externally in astronomy in particular, and there are big new telescope projects coming along. The British are involved in one, the Australians are very likely to be involved in another one, and when these come along, they'll have some impact on us, and the budget will have to just be reviewed and analysed in terms of where's the best place to put the astronomy dollars. And the other thing I have to say, of course, is that when you've got government funding, it's never absolutely guaranteed. In fact, it only goes from year to year. There are forward plans always, but you don't know each year exactly what you'll have, and no promises are ever can never be absolutely secure into the indefinite future.
Well, do you think that the agreement under which this telescope was set up could be made today? I mean, if you'd been starting off afresh today, would a government in today's economic climate and political climate agree to the same sort of agreement?
Oh, yes, I think absolutely, actually. I think they very much, that is the way it's done, and I think there are good prospects for new agreements of this sort, not necessarily between England and Australia, but just between other countries or groups of countries. In astronomy, that's certainly the way it has to go, because the big new telescopes that we're now planning and we're starting to build are the 8-meter class telescopes, and they are simply so expensive that really no country or almost no countries in the world could ever build one by themselves. The only way to build them is to be in partnership with other countries. And I think governments, too, have realized that such agreements are actually very positive, although they put constraints because you're making an international commitment. At the same time, there are big advantages because you're working internationally and collaborating with other countries, and you have spin-offs, you have contacts at the high level with senior people in other countries. and industrially, if you're building a big new project jointly with other countries, then the companies get to see what's going on in each other's countries. And I think the whole thing is a nice way of opening doors. In fact, I mean, astronomy itself is an innocuous pursuit where we don't do any harm to anyone. We're politically neutral, but we can be used as a way of just developing links between countries.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Russell.
Right, thank you, Andrew.